Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 30 years. Wow. My guest today, I'm so excited. I actually have two. They're calling in. Well, actually, one is in studio. The other is calling in from Florida. We're going to talk today about shoulder surgery, but more importantly, shoulder surgery from a couple of different perspectives. One, many of you are going to have a rotator cuff tear, and it'll get to the point where if you leave it alone, it's not fixable. This innovation in shoulder surgery that we're going to talk about today actually for the first time makes it fixable. But it's the craziest idea in the world. It's where we flip and reverse the ball and the socket joint. It's called a reverse shoulder replacement. People who come to see me, they can't lift their arm. It's in so much pain. It's almost like a useless arm. We call it pseudo paralysis. This device, this revolutionary device, allows the surgeon to provide you with an arm that you can now use. Primarily, you'll do it in 60, 70, 80-year-olds. And my guest today, Dr. Matt Pfeiffer, is an expert. And I can't wait to talk to him about the history of this operation, which was initially so odd that nobody even wanted to talk about doing it because it seems so crazy to make what God gave you as the ball into the socket and the socket God gave you into the ball. You literally reverse the surfaces with metal and plastic, obviously, but you give people their life back. And the other aspect of shoulder surgery that I want to get into today is the idea of planning the surgery utilizing virtual modeling. And calling in from Florida will be an expert, Jay Patterson. It's called VIP, virtual implant positioning, where in space you can map out this complex problem so that the surgeon has guidance in a virtual way. So it made me think all week. I'm going to talk about reverse. Where in art, where in sports do we see this groundbreaking revolutionary approach where you're reversing the topic? You make the ball into the socket into the ball. Where in art do we see someone change the game by doing something in reverse? Well, this guy did it. The greatest guitar player of all time, Jimi Hendrix, was a lefty. Fender Stratocaster did not make guitars for lefties. And he changed the world by flipping the guitar upside down and backwards. But his knowledge and sophistication, appreciation for how the guitar made music allowed him to make it sound in a way that nobody had ever heard before. Here's an example. I mean, nobody sounds like this. Jimi Hendrix. He's 15 years old, and he sees in the trash a woman throwing away a ukulele. She's throwing it away because it only has one string. And he grew up poor, dirt poor in Seattle. He asks her for permission, even though it's in the trash, can I have it? She says, of course. He went back and listening to the radio with this one string ukulele, tried to copy what he heard on the radio. And again, he's holding the ukulele upside down and backwards until he was 15 years old and got his first guitar. But just like the Wright brothers, right? These guys invented the airplane. They had to go to France to be discovered because in America at the time, no one was interested in what the Wright brothers were doing. Jimi Hendrix could not get a job. He had to actually get shipped off to London in the early 60s to be discovered, to then become a hero, to come back to the States. What a story. And where in sports is it a game changer to do something in reverse? I thought long and hard all week about this. And for me, it's the greatest free throw shooter I've ever seen, Rick Barry. He's been a guest on this show a couple of times. He shot free throws. Instead of putting his hand on top of the ball, he put his hand on the bottom of the ball. He shot the free throw underhand with a 90% success. When he retired, it was the highest percentage of free throw in the league. I think he's now fourth best all time. It still stands the test of time. And yet, go try to get basketball players to adopt Rick Barry's approach. They won't, especially big men like Wilt Chamberlain and Shaquille O'Neal and DeAndre Jordan. Because they're so tall, they're approaching the basket at a different height. And you're going to hear Tommy Heinsohn talk about how it's different for a big man to shoot a basketball. They would all do well doing it underhand, but they won't. And you're going to hear that about that. Clapper Vision, we'll get to, I hope, during the show. It's got to be about Kevin Durant because it's free agent weekend. And where Kawhi and where Kevin Durant end up, this is the biggest news. Kevin Durant's not going to play. He's got an injury he's got to heal from, surgery he's got to heal from. And I wanted to give you a Clapper Vision about what it is that we're waiting for. What is it? What's different about scar tissue versus normal tissue? And since I'm back from Africa, it'll involve the tall grasses of the Serengeti Plains, where a jeep has now ridden over those grassy plains. We'll get into that Clapper Vision coming up. But let's get right into today's show. At 7:15, Matt Pfeiffer is going to talk to us about the reverse shoulder replacement. And Jay Patterson's going to be calling in to talk about this virtual patterning, if you will, virtual implant positioning, relatable to making shoulder surgery easier. And I can't help but think about virtual thinking in the guitar about Jimi Hendrix. You got to hear the story of Jimi Hendrix. So this is what Eric Clapton said the very first time he met Jimi Hendrix.
They said, bring him down and have him jam with us.
We were just getting ready to go on, and Chaz showed up, Chaz Chandler, with this young black guy who was very striking in every way. I mean, his appearance and his manner, which was, to say the least, very, very shy. He was extremely shy, but at the same time, quite kind of aware of himself, you know. And Jimmy got up and he brought his own guitar.
Listen to this.
And he was left-handed for a start, and he played a normal Strat, you know, so it was, the whole thing was upside down. So that was a little astonishing. And he went straight into Killing Floor, the Howling Wolf song.
He became so proficient. The Beatles, Mick Jagger, everybody wanted to go see this guy who played the guitar upside down and backwards in reverse. Listen to Chaz Chandler talking about how he took over London.
We were doing like small clubs, and the buzz got about, and suddenly all these little clubs we were doing, we were getting £15 or something. I never saw it anyway. And suddenly it was packed, and there was like all these like celebrities coming along, which sort of freaked me out a bit, because I was very young. Like, you're sitting in the dressing room and John Lennon walks in.
The Beatles and the Rolling Stones were the aristocracy of music at the time, and they very early on became big fans of Jimmy. I mean, I remember Jagger turning around and interview one day and say, why the hell are you interviewing me? You should be interviewing Jimi Hendrix.
Isn't that amazing?
Things like that made it happen so quickly.
Also, Chris Stamp, who owned the club that they were playing in, for the first time, you can imagine, he's just looking down, and then he starts to hear the guitar sound completely different than he's ever heard.
The first time I met Hendrix was at a music club called Bag of Nails, which was a 60s nightclub full of 60s beautiful people and rock and roll people. I was there with my partner, Kit Lambert, And there was an ordinary English rock and roll band playing on stage, which I wasn't taking much notice of. Then suddenly I heard this amazing guitar playing.
Mm.
Kit practically knocked tables over to get across to talk to me and said, I've just got to sign this guy. And we sat that night and made out the deal. And he agreed to pay £1,000 advance for the Jimi Hendrix experience. And that was done, sort of worked out on a beer mat.
How could he have been so unappreciated?
Most of what the people had been used to was kind of dressed up, watered down soul music. And for someone like Jimmy to come along was so powerful. I think it was simply that. Simply that he was just so powerful and so direct that it was, you know, it was what everyone had been waiting for.
Mm. Jimi Hendrix's career was going nowhere until he was discovered in a Greenwich Village bar in September 1966 by Chas Chandler, the bass player with the Animals.
I thought of music, he was the best guitarist I'd ever seen. He was playing the little pickup band that was one of these coffee bar things that they have in Greenwich Village where you get like sort of $15 to do a spot. And the first song Jimmy played that afternoon on stage was Hey Joe. And he had it all, you know. He just sat there and thought to himself, well, this is ridiculous. Why hasn't somebody signed this guy up? How come he's loose?
You know? How come he's loose?
A couple of days after we got to England, I bumped into Jack Bruce and Eric in a club called the Cromwellian, where we used to all, was one of our watering holes in them days. And I told them about Jimmy, and they said, well, bring him down to the Regent Polytechnic on Saturday. That was when they had Cream by that time. It was the very early days of Cream. They said, bring him down and have him jam with us.
Mm, Eric Clapton.
He played just about every style you could think of, you know, and not in a flashy way. I mean, he did a few of his tricks, like playing it with teeth and behind his back and things like that, but it wasn't in an upstaging sense at all. And that was it, you know. I think we did maybe just that song, and he walked off, and my life was never the same again, really.
His familiarity and knowledge of where the notes are in space, similar to what this device that we're going to talk about, the average surgeon can't really imagine the three-dimensional nature of these deficiencies in the bone when it really gets bad. But you get to be like Jimi Hendrix with this kind of a device. And you play in reverse, basically. What about in sports? Shooting free throws. Shaquille O'Neal, one of the worst free throw shooters. He knew it. His feeling was that, well, listen to Shaquille O'Neal talk about his poor free throw shooting.
I think it was the man upstairs' way to just keep me humble. Because imagine me with the game that I had shooting like Steph Curry from the free throw line. I'd probably be a difficult man to deal with. Because in my mind, I would know that I'm the best player ever created. Better than Mike, better than Wilt, better. So it was just a way to keep me humble. But when it came time to really buckle down and concentrate, and you got a whole crowd doubting you and a whole crowd supporting you, I always knocked them down.
But Shaq, there's a way of shooting it with a higher percentage. This is Shaq's response.
I told Rick Barry I'd rather shoot 0% than shoot underhand. I'm too cool for that.
Wilt Chamberlain actually had to go to a psychiatrist because he figured he can't shoot these shots because it's a mental thing. Listen to this story.
I just got progressively worse. I think it was totally a head kick. So you can say whatever you want. I shot foul shots very good when I concentrated. But I lost my concentration, and people always would say, hey, do it this way, do it that way, and whatever, you know. They had no any better than I did. I was just, you know, I just missed a lot of fouls.
I went to a psychiatrist, you understand, you know, and for about a month on my free throw situation. After a month, I gave it up. Somebody else paid for the session, $50 a session. I won't say it wasn't, you know, and I after I came out of it for a whole month, the psychiatrist was a better free throw shooter than I was.
And here's Rick Barry.
There's been a lot of surveys done. It's not surveys, research done by physicists. And they have said that mine is the most effective way to shoot free throws because it's a fluid motion, it's a softer shot. So everything from the standpoint of the physical aspect of it has been proven that it's a better shot for them to try, and yet they won't do it.
And the teaching of it has to be done right. Listen to Rick Barry talk about the wrong person can't be teaching you.
Shaq's guy came up to me one time when he worked with me. He said the Lakers. He said he saw me. He said, "Oh, he introduced himself. I'm the shooting coach. I work with Shaq." Well, we tried the underhand free throw, and I looked at him. I said, "You tried the underhand free throw?" I said, "Who taught him?" He said, "Well, I was working with him." And I'm looking at myself like, this is a guy that doesn't have any idea what I do, and he said that he worked with Shaq and it didn't work, which is crazy.
Which is crazy. Coming up next, I'm going to get into the world of art, the world of sports, and the world of surgery collide when you want to make a revolutionary idea. Play the guitar upside down and backwards to make it sound so different. To shoot free throws with a 90% effectiveness, you're going to have to do something so different. And when that patient walks into your room and says, "I can no longer lift my arm up, I've got no more rotator cuff," like Steve Jobs says, you got to think different. Well, how do you think different? You do things in reverse. We'll get into it with the great Dr. Matt Pfeiffer, an expert in reverse shoulder replacements. Coming up next here on the Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA 710. Wow. The wind cries Mary, the great Jimi Hendrix. The guitar was not meant to sound this way. This sounds better than it was supposed to be. Jimi Hendrix accomplished this by playing the guitar, because he was a lefty, in reverse. He played it upside down and backwards because Fender Stratocaster at the time did not make a lefty Stratocaster. Certainly he didn't have one. And as they say, the rest is history. All right, the lines are lit. I want to interview Dr. Matt Pfeiffer, but first let's go to Alan in Los Angeles. Alan, you're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
How can you help? You did it yesterday. I was your patient number one.
Get out of here, Alan.
yeah, what's Rebecca's doc? I'm starving. you're a good man.
Thank you for calling, Alan. It was a pleasure to replace your hip yesterday. I can't believe you're calling the next day.
Hey, why not?
Well, you're special. You know that, Alan? You suffered for long enough, and now you're going to be a new man.
I hope so.
Yep. All right.
Okay, so I just want to let you know you did a great job.
Thank you.
You're coming in Monday, I guess.
Yes, exactly right, Alan. Thanks so much for calling. All right, Warriors. We're hearing from patients. Now we're going to hear from another doctor, someone that I truly respect, an innovator. He's at the cutting edge of orthopedics. He practices up in Santa Barbara, the great Dr. Matt Pfeiffer. Matt, thanks so much for driving down to be in studio with me today.
Clapper, thanks for having me, man.
All right, so let's get into it. This crazy idea that came from France, we got to give them credit, of actually doing surgery in reverse. The story of the reverse shoulder replacement. Take us to the beginning. You're a historian. How do you come up with this idea of doing it in reverse? Teach us.
So I get to play a history teacher here. I'll try and keep it interesting. So a total shoulder replacement. You got to replace the ball. You got to replace the cup. They first started trying it back in 1890. Patient had TB, destroyed the shoulder. There was another French surgeon. I think it was Jules Pine or Penn. Mm-hmm. I can't put that French accent on that. But what he did is he put in metal, platinum. He put in leather and paraffin wax and tried to build this shoulder. And that was the first one. Eventually, keep going down the road, more advancements. There's one of our godfathers in shoulder replacement. His name's Charles Neer.
I know. I got to operate with him because I went to medical school at Columbia University in New York, and Dr. Neer started there. So he's the Mount Rushmore of shoulder replacements. And let me tell you something. He was an intimidating guy to be around.
Was he?
I was scared out of my mind to be around him, but I got to watch him in his, they called them theaters in those days, the operating room theater. And let me tell you, it was exactly that. But he's the granddaddy of making the ball and the socket in the same position that God made it. The ball, you now make it metal. The socket is plastic. Who's the French guy, Dr. Pfeiffer, who started really becoming successful at flipping them and making them in reverse?
Yeah, we're getting to him. I'm going to give a little more props to Neer, because he actually was the first to think of this idea and to understand why you need a reverse. Ball sits in the cup, Think of a golf ball on a tee. The things that hold the ball in the cup besides the shape are the rotator cuff muscles and tendons. There's four of them. Effectively, they form a complex of three. They actually help maintain the ball on the cup. Mm-hmm. When you don't have them, you lose your ball in your cup. So mm-hmm. we're putting anatomic total shoulders in people, and they were failing for that reason if the rotator cuff was torn. Well, back in the 70s, Charles Neer realized this, and he started trying to find ways to constrain it. And what he did, he reversed the ball, he reversed the cup, and it was a way to try and overcome this deficiency in the rotator cuff muscles. Unfortunately, from the 70s and on, they weren't doing so well. They were failing left and right. Mm-hmm. The idea was almost abandoned. Fast forward to 1985, Paul Gramont, and mm-hmm. he is the pioneer right. of the modern reverse out of France. And what he figured out was take the biomechanics of the shoulder and forget about those rotator cuff muscles and look at your deltoid muscle. Now, the deltoid is pretty much what people think of when they look at the shoulder muscle. It's the big one on the front. There's three components to it. It looks really good if you have big ones, if you're a guy in your shirt, and we work at it really hard in the weight room and we're trying to look buff. So what we do with the reverse is, and what Gramont figured out, is if you actually put a little bit more tension on this muscle, it will help hold the shoulder together, and then you can move your arm.
And the way to put more tension on it is by flipping it.
You
can't put enough tension on it if you do it traditionally. Now, the system that you're an expert in, and we have Jay Patterson on the line as well, comes from Arthrex. It's called the Universe Reverse. Or explain a little bit more to us, Jay, what are the benefits of the Arthrex version? How did you make the mousetrap better?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Pleasure to be with you.
Morning, Jay.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, we've at Arthrex have been known globally as a sports medicine company primarily for years and years. And we had sort of the advantage of taking a look at all the sports procedures and the cuff procedures that we had grown experts in and understanding how the shoulder obviously works very well from a cuff procedure. And we had the benefit of being able to observe Paul Gramont and some other innovators with respect to shoulder arthroplasty and enter the market a little bit later than some of the other folks that had been mentioned by Dr. Pfeiffer. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of a benefit to be on the sidelines a bit mm-hmm. and understand what works and sometimes what doesn't work well. And so we were very innovative in being able to put forth a reverse shoulder that offered some options in terms of the way the bone cuts were made, which was resulted in better range of motion and better patient outcomes. Specifically, what we call inclination angle and lateralization are two things that are sort of hallmarks of our system.
So, Jay, I'm one of those surgeons who, for the first 10 years of my practice, I've been doing this for 30 years, I sounded a lot like Shaquille O'Neal, who really rejected the proper way that he should be shooting free throws, which is underhand. This is what Shaq said.
Because it's boring.
But it's been proven to be somewhat effective.
No, it's not. It's not proven. Just because a couple guys did it doesn't mean anybody can do it.
And Rick Barry said, I got the engineers. Listen to Rick Barry's response to that.
There's been a lot of surveys done. It's not surveys, research done by physicists. And they have said that mine is the most effective way to shoot free throws because it's a fluid motion, it's a softer shot. So everything from a standpoint of the physical aspect of it has been proven that it's a better shot for them to try, and yet they won't do it.
So, Jay, why do surgeons prefer the mousetrap that you created with the reverse?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, obviously the patients that they see and that have had this procedure done with our system. The results are very, very good, and so they see the outcomes, and I think ultimately as scientists, they want to, you know, emulate those outcomes with every one of their patients, and I think they feel a certain degree of trust in not only the implant that we put forth to the market, but also mm-hmm. the lineage of Arthrex and the way we've been innovative within the industry, working with surgeons hand-in-hand to build these better mousetraps and to do so not always for, you know, the bottom line, but truly to help their patients do better and feel better as outcomes.
So, Dr. Pfeiffer, I want to ask you, you're the surgeon. You know, you've now been provided with this wackadoo, crazy, underhand free throw, guitar, upside down and backwards device. What are some of the techniques that you use to help you make it more successful? And do you ever use, on the socket side of the joint, this cool device that they came up with called a modular glenoid system? Tell us some of the tricks you've done to make such a crazy non-anatomy thing work.
So, as we can tell, this reverse is progressing with time, and so is the technology, and so is the biomechanics. We're learning things like angles and where we put the new ball, where it used to be in the cup. The best way to do it, we do through study and research. And as time goes on, we look at these. And now when I approach a patient, one, every patient is different, so I have to look at every shoulder a little bit different way. I need a modularity and versatility. So I use systems that allow me to contour my approach to how I'm going to attack and improve a shoulder based on patient's anatomy. And some the anatomy is so destroyed that I need very complex systems that give me the ability to work around very damaged anatomy to make this work. So specifically with the system that we're talking about, with Arthrex, it allows me to change angles of the way that the ball sits. It allows me to put it in different locations, and it allows me to tension it depending on the deltoid level. Mm-hmm. It also allows me to put tension on other muscles that allow a patient to turn their arm in and out. Some of the earlier failures of previous reverses was the tensioning issues. And even though we got the deltoid to work, some of the other muscles that were still attached didn't work so great, so patients didn't have the best outcomes. Mm-hmm. As time goes on and we continue to improve these systems, we make it just better and better for the patients. So there's the ball, there's the cup. On the reverse side of things, where the new ball sits is called the base plate. This is what attaches to the old cup, and this is typically one of the harder aspects of the surgery because these can be very deformed. Effectively, we're working with a very little triangle, and I'm trying to put an implant in this triangle. Think of it as a pitcher trying to pitch a ball into a strike zone. Mm-hmm. Okay, so as long as you hit that strike zone, you're getting strikes, things go well. If you start putting your implants outside in the ball zone, you're not going to have the best results. You don't want to walk everybody. And in other words, you don't want to have failures of these total shoulders.
You know, as I'm doing actually one on Monday, what I find most interesting is all these years, I've always tried to improve on what has been given to me. So if I've got to cut through a tendon on my way into a joint to do the surgery, boy, I'm going to make sure that I've tagged that tendon and I'm going to put it back exactly where it came from on the way out. This operation, you actually have to control yourself to not fix normal structures. You can't put the subscapularis back where it needs to be. You can't put, because it actually messes things up. You have to trust that the device is going to allow you to use a muscle, the deltoid, that's really not designed to initiate lifting your arm above your head, but this device actually makes it work in a different way. It's really, it's Jimi Hendrix making the guitar sound so different. Like this. You ever heard a guitar like this before? No! Guitars are not supposed to sound like dum, dum, dum. And then he does this. I don't know. When I thought about this topic all week long, I couldn't get this song out of my head. Because this guy, so tragic that he died at age 27. But those 27 years gave us a legacy that we could think not only differently, but we can think in reverse. And surgeons like Paul Grammont thinking in reverse. Basketball players like Rick Barry saying, don't put your hands on top of the ball. Put your hands on the bottom of the ball. Because it's a whole different problem for the big man. Listen to Tom Heinsohn talk about that difficulty.
With the big people, is small people are teaching them how to shoot a free throw. So that the big people have too much motion in the shot. And so many things go wrong. They cannot soften the shot up enough because they're too strong.
So it's so interesting. They're too strong. We don't have the tendons. You're a lefty. You don't have a left-handed guitar. I'm just telling you, sometimes think in reverse. You might find the answer there. Coming up next, I'm going to get into, I'll take your calls. We'll open the clinic. The number's 877-710-ESPN. I just would love to talk about shoulders today. I'm going to talk about a woman that I operate on this week where I use the device called a swivel lock, which is one of the coolest things I've ever used to fix a rotator cuff. And I also have to tell you about a reverse food called a hummingbird cupcake that blew my mind this week. Oh, can't wait. All right, you're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Smokey Clapper here. For whatever reason, I've just been reminded of Woody Allen when he used to have this stand-up comedy routine. Because today we're talking about things that get better when you go in reverse. And Woody Allen used to say, I rented a car. And when I rented the car, I made sure I was being charged for miles. And my strategy was, when I picked up the rental car, I drove around in reverse the entire time I had the car, so there'd be 0 miles. That was funny. But I want to talk about shoulders. For those of you going to the gym and trying to get buff, just like Dr. Pfeiffer talked about those big deltoid muscles. Probably Dwight Howard had the biggest deltoid muscles we've ever seen. God, were they massive. But there's a lot of muscles. Here's a clapper vision for you. Let's say you get up this morning and you put a t-shirt on. Okay, fine. Now, crazy enough, I want you to put on a second t-shirt. Why would you want to put on a second t-shirt? You only have one t-shirt on. Why would you put on two? Because the clapper vision is, that's actually how the musculature of your body is. In other words, if you remove your skin, the next layer of muscles, the outer t-shirt, is your pec major, where your nipple is in front of your chest, your deltoid muscle on your upper arm. You can feel this as I'm talking. And you can feel the trapezius muscle in the back. That's the outer t-shirt of muscles. And they can get into trouble. You can tear your pec major. You can get tendonitis around your deltoid. The trapezius muscle can go into spasm because your neck has a herniated disc. You can get all kinds of localized pains in these areas. But when we talk about the rotator cuff muscle that lifts your arm above your head, I'm talking about you taking off that outer t-shirt and now you have the deeper t-shirt. Because there's a deeper set of muscles, like a deeper t-shirt. And that's where those muscles are. That more, the layer of muscles that's right on the bone and the joint itself. That's where the rotator cuff is. And what's really interesting is, they tried to treat Kevin Durant for his calf strain, which is a muscle that's right below the skin. So that's that outer t-shirt, not the inner t-shirt, the outer t-shirt, by trying to get scar tissue, by putting him in a boot and being on crutches. This is before he tore his Achilles tendon. And you pretty much can treat, even if he, God forbid, had torn his Achilles tendon, you can get away often with using just a boot to treat that Achilles tendon, not necessarily to have surgery. But you really can't get away with it when you tear your rotator cuff. Why is that? And here's a principle that many surgeons don't even understand. But when you move your arm around and move your shoulder around, there's a lubricating motor oil in the ball and socket joint called synovial fluid. And that synovial fluid has all kinds of substances in it, immunoglobulins to fight infection. It has all kinds of nutrients to feed the cartilage of the ball and socket joint itself. But that motor oil, if it touches a tendon or a muscle that is torn, like your rotator cuff, guess what it does? It doesn't let it heal. Kind of like your ACL. You tear your ACL in your knee. Why do we have to fix it with surgery always? And yet we don't have to fix the medial collateral ligament, the one just underneath the skin. Because the ACL is bathed in motor oil, in the synovial fluid. And that prevents the ligament from healing like the medial collateral ligament will heal with just a brace. We have to operate. We have to use a graft. So the rotator cuff now has communication. That torn end of the tendon, the motor oil can come out of the joint and it blocks the tendon from ultimately healing. It's fascinating. And that is why you'll need to have surgery to fix it. And these elegant new tools that we have now, like I used this week on this woman, the swivel lock, created by the great Dr. Neil Eletrosh, my favorite. But that's a whole nother story. All right, the lines are lit up. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Jason in Pasadena. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Doc.
Wait a minute. What do you do for a living?
I'm a dentist. I actually called last week at the end of the show, and you said to call back.
Oh, good. Now's your time, Jason. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm a runner, and I took a fall about 6-7 months ago. I think I kind of fell out on my arm, and the physical therapist has since said it's what you call a foosh, or fall on outstretched hand. Mm-hmm. But what the doctor, the orthopedist had looked at it, had said that I have a biceps sinotendinitis.
Mm-hmm.
I might not be saying that right.
Mm-hmm.
He'd recommended either cortisone shot or PT, so I opted for the PT.
Good. You're a smart man, Jason.
Well, thank you. I listen to the show. I've been doing about 2 months of PT. Haven't really noticed any improvement. At times, actually feel like it's aggravating and making it worse. So just wondering what your thoughts are. We've done an MRI, everything. He didn't see anything, no tears or anything. So just wanted your thoughts on what could be going on.
You know, the biceps tendon is not a bad tendon for you to try a single injection if you want.
Okay.
For example, like a trigger finger, if your finger gets stuck because the way the tendon moves through the pulley. Here's a Clapper vision for the biceps tendon. You ready?
Got it.
Think of your arm as a fishing rod. All right? Your arm is a fishing rod. Whether it's made in the days of Mayberry and Andy Griffith, where it's made of bamboo, but now obviously they're made of fiberglass, the shaft, the stiff part of the fishing rod. That's the bone of your humerus. Capiche?
Got it. Okay.
The biceps tendon, and bi in Latin means two, like a bicycle, two wheels. Sep in Latin means head. This muscle has two heads. How many heads do you think the triceps muscle has? Three.
Yep.
How many heads do you think the quadriceps muscle has? Four. So it's really not that difficult when you just learn Latin. But anyway, the biceps has two heads. The skinny, long one, Clapper vision, looks a lot like the fishing line, right? And how do you give... So when you want to catch that fish and you want to have a mechanical advantage to pull the fish in, you want the fishing line to be adhered as close to the stiffness of the rod as possible, so you have these loops going up the whole fishing rod, keeping the line as close as possible to the stiff shaft. Capiche?
Got it. Okay.
Well, the biceps tendon has one of those loops right where your shoulders, right where you're having the pain. And if there's inflammation in the tendon, mild, because your MRI is negative, because they can see tearing if you had it.
Mm-hmm.
If the line gets too fat or the loop gets too swollen, you will have some pain. It's biceps tendonitis. And if you put a shot there once, I wouldn't do two or three, and you can quiet down that inflammation because you tried therapy, it didn't work, you gave it time, it didn't work, I would be okay with a single shot for you to try to do. Okay?
Okay. Got it.
Keep in touch, Jason, and thanks so much. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break. We're going to pay some bills. And Jason, you got to find a total stranger today and do something nice for them. That's all you'll be thanking me. Coming up next, I'll take some more calls because all the lines are lit up. But I got to tell you where that cupcake is. That reminds me of a reverse shoulder. I'll explain. Coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show. What's this? What's this song, Steve Paulette? It's just fantastic. Oh, Like a Rolling Stone. This is Jimi Hendrix doing Like a Rolling Stone. Wow. It's just the timing. This is a guy who used the feedback from the amplifier as part of his song.
Like the name of it already?
When you think of him, there's one word that describes Jimi Hendrix with the guitar. He's fearless. And that's what you want to be. After 30 years of being a surgeon, what will the anatomy be like? I don't think Jimi Hendrix ever worried one bit about what he was about to do. He was fearless. All right, let's go to Quinn in Simi Valley. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Morning, Dr. Clapper. Thank you for all that you do. You're awesome.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. I get up early in the morning to meet people like you on the radio, Quinn. So thank you very much and spread the word. And it's a beautiful thing to share knowledge. You know, I believe strongly in karma, Quinn. And God has blessed me many, many ways. And I think this is a big reason. So if I have the knowledge, I'm happy to share it. What do you do for a living, by the way?
I do construction.
So you measure twice, cut once. There I was on the roof. I was 8 years old with my father. I decided to help him put shingles on the roof and bang with the hammer. And he heard me go, ow. And he looked at me, goes, Robbie, you hit the wrong nail. The fingernail, not the 10-penny nail.
There you go.
All right. So we're going to talk about shoulders. I know you got ankle stuff too, it looks like, but let's keep it to the shoulder because I got just a couple of minutes to be with you.
For sure. I don't know what I did. To my knowledge, have I ever hurt my shoulder in an act mm-hmm. or in a motion, but there's some nights that, I can barely even sleep on my left side.
So the key question is, does the pain stay up by your shoulder, which you can feel with your other hand right now, and radiate into your arm? The key question, Quinn, is I need to know that it doesn't go below your elbow, into your forearm, into your wrist and hand. Because two things in life cause shoulder pain. One, your shoulder's the trouble. The biceps tendon we just talked about, your rotator cuff, your labrum, early arthritis, and blah, blah, blah. There's lots of different diagnoses. But those pains, I don't care if it's a tumor or a fracture, the pain stays above the elbow. So does it stay above the elbow or does it go below the elbow?
No, it does not go below the
elbow. Then you have a shoulder problem that's emanating from your shoulder. So do not let them give you cortisone shots. Like I just told Jason, it's okay, but I hate that stuff. Because number one, you need a diagnosis. When you build a house, you use a blueprint, right? You got to know what you're working with. You got to have a plan. First, and in this crazy broken system we have, I'm supposed to send you to therapy without actually even knowing the diagnosis. No, you're getting a second opinion from Dr. Clapper right now on the radio. And that means you need to march in on Monday and tell them you got all a right. second opinion and you need an MRI. And then you'll get the MRI, carpenter to carpenter's son. It'll be my pleasure to actually translate it for you with some Clapper vision. You always want to try therapy first, but I have no idea what your diagnosis is. That's what you need. So please do that. And thanks so much for the kind words.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Again, appreciate all your help.
Okay. You're very welcome. Look forward to talking to you again. All right, Warriors. Coming up next, I'm going to tell some stories because today's topic is about the advances in the world of orthopedic surgery. So that's what today's show is really all about, is what's the newest, coolest thing out there in shoulder surgery. And at 8:15, we're going to get into it more with Jay Patterson calling in from Florida. But I want to tell you some stories about the concept of doing things in reverse. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710.